Well, hello Audio Boom fans. I say Audio Boom fans, I don't know that we're actually fans of Audio Boom, are we? It's all one word you're listening to, and it's 8:15. Whew, God. It's 8:15 on Thursday the 22nd, is it? 22nd of January 2015 years later. Oh, clutch. Oh, it stinks of clutch, that car. I'm walking Molly. So in the same vein as Mac McColgan records his morning thoughts, these are this is my recording for my recording as I walk the dog. There's a cone, traffic cone in the middle of the path that doesn't need to be there. Right, come here, let you off. Come here to me. Ta-ta. It's a cold night. It must be about -1, -2. All the cars in the street are frozen. But the thing is our street must be in a little bit of a cold bubble. It's always probably 1 to 3 degrees cooler than well, my work, for instance. My work's exactly 2 miles away. Hey, this way. Haven't really been recording much, really, in the grand scheme of things. I was injured, wasn't I? I am still. I can walk, but what I have to do when I turn is kind of deliberately lift my leg and my right leg and kind of rotate my hips. I can't rotate on the ankle, so to speak. So, you know, let's say you're going round a bend or round a corner. I can't do that. I think I've damaged a bone, bruised a bone. It's bloody sore to touch. There's a bit of swelling there. The bruising is just about gone. It's an absolutely 100% clear night. Oh, I was going to say I could hear something I've never heard before with these binaural mics, and that's a kind of digital hissing, but it's not. It's an outside aircon unit or generator or something. Something like that. Oh, God, it's absolutely freezing. It's probably the coldest now that it's been all week. Yeah, see all the stars. It's a beautiful night. To be honest, it's a little bit misty. There's no wind. I can see steam rising from people's chimneys. Steam? How could it be steam rising from a chimney, Richard? What's it going to be? Heat. Well, water vapour, technically, isn't it? I don't think anybody's got a coal fire on by us. It's all gas. It's going straight up. There's no air movement whatsoever. It's really quite nice, to be honest. It's cold, don't get me wrong. I was just thinking the other day that I think I need to try and instigate something on Audioboo. Pilgrim Chris has been talking about He hasn't been talking specifically about the meaning of life, but if I bracketed all the meaning of life and does stuff have a purpose, and it's pretty heavy conversation. I was just thinking back to Ian Cath's old podcast. I say old. Is that the right word to use, Ian, to describe it? People telling stories. I love people telling stories. It's really interesting to listen to. And I remember Mac McColgan told a story about when he was a wee boy. Aye, a wee boy, Mac. Wee Stew. Probably a little bit smaller than when he was wee Stew. What bridge was it? You went to a stanchion on a bridge. Anyway, the point is, it was a great story. I love listening to the stories. And so today, that's all I've really thought about. Have I got a story to tell that you might find interesting? I've got lots of stories. Some I can't tell yet. I suppose I could tell a story about when we lived at the east end of Hexham. We called it the East End, but there were a lot more houses east of where we lived, but the area was known as the East End. With many East Ends, it was where the shite of the town lives, pardon my French. It was terrible. All the crims and the gangsters and the lowlives of the town, they lived in this area. So let me tell you a story. Well, I don't know specifically a story, but I'll tell you about life there. So we used to live, about 150 metres away from the first school, the elementary, the primary school that I went to. And we lived up the bank, up this hill, which was nicknamed Hill 40. Down the other side of the hill was Hill 60, because it was steeper. Why it was called Hill 40 and Hill 60, I don't know. And halfway down Hill 40, so halfway down the road to school, I don't even want to say 75 metres, probably less than that, about 40 metres, you turned left and you went down the middle bank. It was known as the middle bank. And that was nicknamed Hill 20. And it was just a little narrow passage through to the top end of a cul-de-sac. So the cul-de-sac led down to the main road. But anyway, so when I was a lad, I'm talking about from six to kind of 8 years old, six, seven, 8 years old, something like that, five, six, seven, 8 years old. There were a lot of we used to call them the bad boys. Now, I couldn't tell you how old they would have been. So if I was like six or seven, I'm going to say six. They probably were, I don't know, maybe 13, 14. But around that time, there was a heavy punk movement in my town. So a lot of these bad boys were suitably dressed as punks. So kind of skin tight jeans with Dr. Martens, some up to their knees, Dr. Martin boots, jackets with their sleeves held on with massive safety pins, mohawks or skinheads. There's another car that smells of clutch. Generally quite scruffy as well. They were heavily into glue sniffing. What's glue sniffing? They used to buy like gum paste glue in a tin, and they used to spoon it into a you know, a small plastic bag, you know, like a freezer bag or something like that, and then hold that up, you know, over their nose and mouth, and then inhale the toxic fumes. So there was a lot of glue sniffing, and when we used to go play up the Bankies, a thing called the Bankies, which was on the opposite side of the road to us, there was a hill, a field and hill and some trees all around it. We used to go play there, make camps and this, that and the other. But when we were up the Bankies, as we used to call it, we used to find these empty bags of glue, and obviously the glue had solidified. One of the fathers of one of my friends pointed out one day that he says, you can tell the glue sniffers because they've got spots. They're either really red and or they've got spots around their mouth and nose. And so from that day forth, we used to go spotting the glue sniffers. But anyway, at the bottom of the middle bank was a boy called Michael White. If I was six, he was maybe 10 or 11. He didn't go to our school. I mean, he was older than us. No, he didn't go to our school. I don't know what school he would have gone to, but he was a really nasty lad. He didn't have any friends. And I say that because all of the people that were my age or maybe a year older than me and definitely younger than me, we always used to knock about together. And so Michael White, I know for a fact, didn't have any friends, and very rarely did we see him outside of his garden, except for twice, and I'll come on to that. Michael White had a little Jack Russell, and this is where my fear of Jack Russells came from when I was a kid, because that Jack Russell was a nasty little bloody thing. I used to come after him. Back in the day, people just used to let their dogs out, you know, into the street, and it was no big deal really in the grand scheme of things, unless of course you spotted a dog that was a bit nasty, like Michael White's dog, and this freaking little thing would run after you and it would be snapping at your ankles, and you know, I remember it specifically biting my friends. Michael White was a really, really nasty lad. He just went out of his way to, I don't even want to say bully, it was just pure violence. Hit you with sticks, punch you, throw bricks at you. He was a nasty, nasty lad, you know. I'm glad that one day, you know, I don't know how old, maybe 7.5 years old, I think. One day, their house was empty and they'd moved. And I do recall that they never came from our town in the first place. They came from Washington, down Newcastle way, towards Newcastle, Sunderland and Newcastle way. You got Washington. And they'd buggered off back down there again. So, come on, Molly. Yeah, I do remember he was a nasty boy. And then, who else was there? Oh, Gilly. Peter McGill. Oh, God. And he was he was a real nasty punk. We used to call him the punks. There was him, Paul Addison, and a couple of others. Piggy, did Piggy hang around with them then? I know what you're doing, dog. This way. There was like it was definitely four or five of them used to go around together. They were nasty, bloody lads. Criminals at a very young age, you know, 14, 15 years old, they would have been. And if you saw them at 100 paces, you'd be on your heels and you were away. I was scared to death. And if you ever saw Gilly, he was a skinhead, and he had the bomber jacket on and the blue drain pipe jeans, big Dr. Martin boots, and he used to cut about, walk down the road, like this kind of strut that just put the fear of God, you know, like really necky, cheeky punk strut, you know, he just oozed evil. And he was in trouble with the police all the time. Really, really nasty lad. And is one of the lads that he used to knock around with, Peter Addison. Peter Addison's dad was a really... His mother must have died, or... I don't remember his mother, but... he was a really, really nasty boy as well. But his dad was... his dad was really gentle. He always used to talk to us, and... you could tell that his dad used to have words with him. Peter Addison. I remember hot summers. The seasons back then were, as you would expect, you know, spring. So the typical, stereotypical things about spring, you know, flowers coming through and primroses and blossom and blue skies, you know. Summers were hot. I look back at, whenever my parents, I look back at those photo albums, and I just see all of the summers were hot. Everybody was out the in the front gardens, and you know, the families that lived in our, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, so 6 semi-detached houses in my little bit on the top of the street before Hill 60, the top of Hill 60 and Hill 40. So between there, the top of the hill, down to Hill 20, we used to get together and have paddling pools, and I don't think anybody did barbecues back then. I can't remember barbecues until just before we left that house, when I was coming up to 8 and a half years old. I was when we moved. Oh no, so nearly 9 years old when we moved. hot summers. Typical winter, autumns, and the winters, always snow, always snow, and deep as well. And now that I get older, you know, my wife and I always compare the seasons to back in the day. I mean, my wife lived a lot in Germany, of course, but with her mother. We do compare the fact that there were definite season structure. It was structured almost. So, oh, it's just great times, you know, such good times, good friends, and nothing was ever complicated back then. It was so simple, and as a child, I think, you know, living where we did, even at a young age, I understood that everybody around us, that lived around us, were bad in some way. You know, they were on the dole, they were criminals or gangsters even. And I say gangsters, I'm not talking about, you know, like the mob, but, you know, the gangsters of my town, they were into some serious crime. I remember one night, our street was a narrow street, and we heard a car flying. It had come up Hill 60, and it went past our house down Hill 40. It went flying past our house. I mean, to be doing 10 miles an hour is too fast in that bit, and this car must have been doing 30 miles an hour. And then two police cars went whizzing past, and it was Denny Kane, who was the gangster who lived about 60 metres down the street. Denny Kane was being chased by the police. And it's funny now, because that man is still a freaking gangster. And he runs the railway pub in Hexham, which is opposite the railway station. So if you ever stopping off at Hexham, come out the railway station and kind of, as you come out the railway station, across the road to your 10 o'clock, is the railway inn, the railway hotel. I can't remember what it's called now, but the railway something. That man's run by a criminal. But yeah, so there was always this little bit of fear I had, you know. I remember my dad had, my dad was really, you know, he was into scouting. He is involved with the scouts, but we had a trailer outside the front of our house, and it had some camping gear. You know, it was jam-packed full of camping gear, you know, tents and sleeping bags and cookers and this, that and the other. And I think, Molly, I don't know what the period of time was. I don't know whether it was like overnight or we went away shopping during the day or whatever it was, but we came back and somebody says somebody's been into your trailer. I think they knew fine well who had been into our trailer, but they pinched a load of stuff. And also they've been into our back garden, tried to get into the shed in our back garden. I don't know why they couldn't, because it was dropping to bits. And they'd pinched a couple of large lumps of quartz, quartz crystal, out of, you know, ornamental stuff for the garden. It was real, you know. They pinched that out of our garden. So there was always that fear, and I think, you know, notwithstanding that house was tiny, excuse me, it's freezing. Notwithstanding that house was tiny, two-bedroom council house. I think we were outgrowing it anyway, but you know, it was just a rubbish area, and so we moved in. I don't know what year would it have been. 87, I think. Summer holidays, 1987. To where my parents live now, into another council estate. But well, actually, when we did move there, it was a nice place. But since then, the area's been inhabited by more local dross. Where's the dog? Moll? Come here. I think there's a fella over there walking his dog. I don't think there's a specific story there. I think there's just little bits of information about what my childhood. I can't think about anything specific. Yes, let me tell you this. Probably about 1985 or even 84. My dad bought a Bedford CF Caravette. It was a beautiful machine. I loved that machine. It was white with accents of black. The grill was painted black. And I think the bottoms of the doors, like the bottom few inches of the doors, were painted black, something like that. I don't know whether that was its original colour or whoever he got it from, because I don't know where he got it from, had painted it. But anyway, we'd been away then a couple of times, and then one summer we went touring the UK, well, the GB mainland, for about a week or something, and in preparation we painted that van yellow with a 3-inch red stripe around the middle, all the way around the vehicle. It was beautiful. It was absolutely I was so proud of it. I was so proud of it. And we nicknamed the vehicle the Yellow Peril. It was a four-berth Caravette. the bench seats converted into a double bed. It had a table when folded up, it kind of slotted in behind the driver, but the table would go in the middle, obviously, to eat off, but then you folded the legs and slotted in at about shin height, and with some cushions that were covertly stored away, formed a double bed. The roof was a push-up roof, not on an angle, the roof went straight up, so it extended up, raised up, and from the outside, inside, but the outside edges, so above the bench seating, we would roll out bunk beds. So you'd roll out on this fairly heavy metal bar, actually, and the metal bar would sit in cups, and there was two bunk beds, one on either side, and they were obviously for me and my brother. And it was a four gear vehicle with an overdrive. And you know what, I remember in the winter, whenever we drove it, the smell of damp, actually. And one time it did leak, because I remember after we crashed our car, we had to drive around in the Yellow Peril. That was its last days, actually. But anyway, that's another story. But there was always a smell of damp in the winter. But during the winter, the engine was kind of protruded into the cab. Quite a strange thing. It was obviously behind the cover, but like between the driver and the front seat passenger, the engine was like just there behind the cover, and it was so nice and warm. It was wonderful. And I don't know how long we did it for, a week or maybe longer? I can't remember. I think it was probably just a week. I think my dad would have taken just a week off work. But we went around the UK. Molly? Sorry if I'm shouting or whistling really loudly. She hasn't seen a squirrel. Good job. And we went to Devon and Cornwall, went to Penzance. We went to St. Ives. We went to, what's the smugglers? We went to the Jamaica Inn. I remember going into the Jamaica Inn in Cornwall. We went to Ross-on-Wye. We went to Weston-super-Mare. Did we go? I'm sure we went into Scotland. I'm sure we did. I remember one morning. Oh, I'll tell you where we went. Cheddar Gorge. Because I remember this. I always talk about this to my dad. That this one particular morning. It was really weird. I think my brother and I would fall asleep as my dad was driving along. And in the morning we would miraculously find or, you know, wake up on the bunk beds. So God knows what happened there. We wake up in the morning, or my dad might have woken us up. He says, "Yeah, I've got a surprise for you. I've got a surprise." And we're like, "Oh my life, he's bought us bikes or something, you know." And so he says, "Right, come out the back of the van, close your eyes." Right, okay, out the back. Right, I want you to keep your eyes shut, but tilt your heads up. Okay, done that. Right, open your eyes, open them up. And there we were at the bottom of one of... we were parked, we'd camped overnight in one of the car parks at Cheddar Gorge, and we were looking up. Molly, where is that dog? We're looking up, you know, one of the bits in the Cheddar Gorge, and I was so disappointed. I wasn't really bothered. and actually, we've visited that exact same spot since a number of times. To this day, since that time, and I've visited since, I'm in awe, because it's such a beautiful place. It was just a fantastic holiday. I do remember one morning, do you know, I remember two things. One, we'd run out of milk. I don't know where the hell we were, but my mother and I went walking. It was really early in the morning, like 6:30 or 7 o'clock in the morning. It was summer, so it was, I remember it being warm, but nobody about. And my mother was on the hunt for a milkman. And these were the days where, you know, the milkman drove electric milk floats, and you could buy the produce on the back of the float from the milkman. And we did, we bought some milk. And thinking back, the milk would have only been for me and my brother, probably, because I remember it was full fat milk, and my mother didn't drink it then, and my dad doesn't consume dairy products at all, so it must have been for me and my brother. And I do remember, it might have even been that day. I remember my parents saying, "We've run out of money, we've got to go home." But it was, we only went home for a night. We stayed overnight, so whether they, I don't know what we did, but we went home, and then we went back out again for another few nights. It was bizarre. Anyway, one of the little things about that particular week was, as a child, I used to wet the bed. I had really poor bladder control, and I do remember. It was really funny, and you know what's coming. I remember being asleep in the Yellow Peril, dreaming of using the toilet. Okay, so pause it there. Switch to my dad, who will be sleeping on the double bed underneath me. You know what's coming, and he said he was dreaming as well. He was dreaming of drinking. And he says in his dream that whatever he was drinking tasted really funny, and kind of in kind of mid-dream, mid-waking up, he's thinking to himself, that tastes really familiar, but it's, you know, it's not nice. He's like this. And it was, yes, it was me weeing. I was wetting the bed. Weeing directly onto his face. Oh, my life. Oh, sorry, you had to be there, clearly. And we talk about that to this day. To this day. Oh, God. Great times. Such good times. And, do you know, it's because of that one specific holiday that we had that I made the decision, along with my wife, to buy Dolly, our motorhome, so that we too could have great times, and hopefully children not to... There's no opportunity for them to wee on my face. Twofold. One, they don't wet the bed. And secondly, I'll never be in a position where I'm going to be sleeping underneath them. Great times. And I hope to get out this summer. We're planning a holiday in Dolly this year for a week. Or maybe a little tiny bit longer. I say that because, well, we haven't quite decided. But we're just deciding on where to go, you see, because there's so many places in the UK we want to go to. We're kind of limited by range. That sounds really strange. But I suppose what we need to do is really just plan where we're going to go. I want to go around the coast of Scotland, but we've also got the opportunity to go to Germany to see Sarah's uncle, who lives near Mainz. It's a bit of a trek, but I'm quite adventurous when it comes to travelling and driving. to, you know, push the boundary, see how far we can go, but not on Dolly really, because she's a bit heavy and a bit slow for the 1.9 litre turbo diesel engine that's in her. And so I've wanted to go for so many years. It's the island of Sylt, right in the northern part of Germany. Sylt, spelled S-Y-L-T. And beautiful place, just a little strip of land. If you've ever been to Germany, or you may have seen a German registered car. It's got a sticker on the back. It'll always be black, a black sticker, and it always reminds me of someone dancing, stick kicking the leg out, but it's like a T shape on its side, you know, cocked over 90 degrees to the left. And like we all maybe have seen the stickers that boy racers or quite a lot of these cars in this country now have got stickers of what's that racing track? Molly. Anyway, Sylt. Sylt is a sticker that a kind of silhouette of the plan of the island that people have on the back of the cars. So I really want to go there. I also, if we're in Sylt, just nip over the border into Denmark. Because you kind of go to the border between Germany and Denmark and then turn left to go to Sylt. But I've also wanted to go, you know, through Germany into Austria, into northern Italy. Once you're in the south of Germany in the Allgäu, it's no distance really through Austria to northern Italy, no distance. And you know, if I had the time and the money, more the time, then I would definitely venture into south of France, definitely Spain. I'm a member of a Facebook group, Motorhomes and Campervans UK. Really, really nice people, actually. Well, really nice people. there was a conversation on there. Actually, the conversations kind of repeat themselves because the new people join or they just want advice. But anyway, one such conversation yesterday was how long does it take to get anywhere decent in Spain? It takes 3 or 4 days. A friend of mine has got a house in Spain, not far from Benidorm, about 45 minutes away from Benidorm. And it's 1,200 miles to drive, and he did that. He drove a few years ago for the first time ever. Usually they fly, but he drove, and he did it in 2 days. He must have been flying. But they did. They stopped overnight in the south of France somewhere at a motel. But for us to get there, It would take, at the very, very least, 3 days of hard driving in Dolly. So, God, I've rambled on a bit there, haven't I? Have I gone over an hour? The zoom's in my pocket here. Oh no, 39 minutes. 39 minutes. Whew. Yeah. Plans. Oh, so anyway, if you've got any stories, I'm interested to listen to some stories. If you want to share an experience, please do. I'm gonna have a bit of a think, actually. I've done quite a few things in my life, quite a lot of things I can't talk about. Ooh, that sounds mysterious, doesn't it? But one day I will, in my memoirs, I'll really release that information. But if you've got a story, how about sharing it with us? I'm really interested in listening. I'm sure Mac's got a few. Ian Cath. Oh, you're all out there. I'm interested in listening or hearing things about where you live. There's loads of us from different countries here. We've got people in the States and Canada. I could tell stories about Canada. I went to I was in Canada for 2 months, but that's another story. We got listeners in Germany. So tell us a story. It'd be great to hear it. And I'll speak to you soon. See ya.
All one word. All one word. Out. One word. Out. One word.